Chapter 13. Bill Keller heard the small animal, the snail or slug, near him, and at once he got into it. But he had been tricked. It was sightless. He was out, but he could not see or hear. He could only move.
"Let me back," he called to his sister in panic. "Look what you did. You put me into something wrong."
"You did it on purpose," he said to himself as he moved. He moved on and on, searching for her. "If I could reach out," he thought, "reach upward." But he had nothing to reach with, no limbs of any sort. "What am I now that I'm finally out?" he asked himself as he tried to reach up. "What do they call those things up there that shine, those lights in the sky? Can I see them without having eyes?" "No," he thought, "I can't." He moved on, raising himself now and then as high as possible, and then sinking back once more to crawl, to do the one thing possible for him in his new life, his born outside life. In the sky, Walt Dangerfield moved in his satellite, although he was resting with his head in his hands. The pain inside him grew, changed, absorbed him, until, as before, he could imagine nothing else. And then he thought he saw something. Beyond the window of the satellite, a flash far off along the rim of the Earth's darker edge. What was that? He asked himself. An explosion, like the ones he had seen and cringed from several years ago. The flares ignited over the surface of the Earth. Were they beginning again? On his feet he stood peering out, hardly breathing. Seconds passed, and there were no further explosions. And the one he had seen, it had been peculiarly vague and shadowy, with a diffuseness that had made it seem somehow unreal, as if it was only imagined. As if, he thought, it was more a recollection of a fact than the fact itself. It must be some sort of sidereal echo, he concluded, a remnant left over from E-Day, still reverberating in space somehow, but harmless now, more so all the time. And yet it frightened him. Like the pain inside him, it was too odd to be dismissed. It seemed to be dangerous, and he could not forget it. "I feel ill," he repeated to himself, resuming his litany based on his great discomfort. "Can't they get me down? Do I have to stay up here, creeping across the sky again and again forever?" For his own needs, he put on a tape of the Bach B minor Mass. The giant choral sound filled the satellite and made him forget. The pain inside, the dull, elderly explosion briefly outlined beyond the window, both began to leave his mind. "Kyrie eleison," he murmured to himself. Greek words embedded in the Latin text. Strange. Remnants of the past still alive, at least for him. "I'll play the B minor Mass for the New York area," he decided. "I think they'll like it, a lot of intellectuals there. Why should I only play what they request, anyhow? I ought to be teaching them, not following. And especially," he thought, "if I'm not going to be around much longer. I better get going and do an especially bang-up job here at the end." All at once his vehicle shuddered. Staggering, he caught hold of the wall nearest him. A concussion, series of shock waves passing through. Objects fell and collided and burst. He looked around, amazed. "Meteor?" he wondered. It seemed to him almost as if someone were attacking him. He shut off the B minor Mass and stood, listening and waiting. Far off through the window, he saw another dull explosion, and he thought, "They may get me, but why? It won't be long, anyhow, before I'm finished. Why not wait?" And then the thought came to him, "But damn it, I'm alive now, and I better act alive. I'm not utterly dead yet." He snapped on his transmitter and said into the mic, "Sorry for the pause, folks, but I sure felt giddy there for a while. I had to lie down, and I didn't notice the tape had ended. Anyhow." Laughing his laugh, he watched through the window of the satellite for more of the strange explosions. There was one, faint and farther off. He felt a measure of relief. Maybe they wouldn't get him after all. They seemed to be losing track of the range, as if his location were a mystery to them. "I'll play the corniest record I can think of," he decided, as an act of defiance. "By Mir bist du schön, that ought to do it." whistling in the dark, as they say, and he laughed again, thinking about it. What an act of defiance it was, by God! It would certainly come as a surprise to whoever was trying to eradicate him, if that was in fact what they wanted to do. Maybe they're just plain tired of my corny talk and my corny readings, Dangerfield conjectured. Well, if so, this will fix them.
I'm back, he said into his mic. At least for a while. Now, what was I about to do? Does anybody remember?
There were no more concussions. He had a feeling that, for the time being, they had ceased.
Wait, he said. I've got a red light on. Somebody's calling me from below. Hold on.
From his tape library, he selected the proper tape, carried it to the transport, and placed it on the spindle.
I've got a request for Bymir Bistushane, he said with grim relish, thinking of their dismay down below. Can you beat that?
No, you can't, he said to himself. And by the Andrews sisters. Dangerfield is striking back. Grinning, he started the tape into motion. Edie Keller, with a delicious shiver of exultation, watched the angleworm crawling slowly across the ground and knew with certitude that her brother was in it. For inside her, down in her abdomen, the mentality of the worm now resided. She heard its monotonous voice. Boom, 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 it went, in echo of its nondescript biological processes.
Get out of me, worm,
she said, and giggled. What did the worm think about its new existence? Was it as dumbfounded as Bill probably was? I have to keep my eye on him, she realized, meaning the creature wriggling across the ground, for he might get lost.
Bill, she said, bending over him, you look funny. You're all red and long. Did you know that?
And then she thought, what I should have done was put him in the body of another human being. Why didn't I do that? Then it would be like it ought to be. I would have a real brother outside of me who I could play with. But, on the other hand, she would have a strange new person inside her, and that did not sound like much fun. Who would do, she asked herself. One of the kids at school? An adult? I bet Bill would like to be in an adult. Mr. Barnes, maybe. Or Hoppy Harrington, who is afraid of Bill anyhow. Or, she screeched with delight, Mama! It would be so easy. I could snuggle up close to her, lay against her, and Bill could switch, and I'd have my own mama inside me. And wouldn't that be wonderful? I could make her do anything I wanted, and she couldn't tell me what to do. And, Edie thought, she couldn't do any more unmentionable things with Mr. Barnes anymore, or with anybody else. I'd see to that. I know Bill wouldn't behave that way. He was as shocked as I was.
Bill,
she said, kneeling down and carefully picking up the angleworm. She held it in the palm of her hand.
Wait until you hear my plan. You know what? We're going to fix Mama for the bad things she does.
She held the worm against her side, where the hard lump within lay.
Get back inside now. You don't want to be a worm anyhow. It's no fun.
Her brother's voice once more came to her.
You poo-poo. I hate you. I'll never forgive you. You put me in a blind thing with no legs or nothing. All I could do was drag myself around.
I know,
she said, rocking back and forth, cupping the now useless worm in her hand still.
Listen, did you hear me? You want to do that, Bill, what I said? Shall I get Mama to let me lie against her so you can do you know what? You'd have eyes and ears. You'd be a full-grown person.
Nervously, Bill said,
I don't know. I don't think I want to walk around being Mama. It sort of scares me.
Sissy, Edie said. You better do it, or you may never get out ever again. Well, who do you want to be, if not Mama? Tell me and I'll fix it up. I cross my heart and promise to fall down black and hard.
I'll see, Bill said. I'll talk to the dead people and see what they say about it. Anyhow, I don't know if it'll work. I had trouble getting out into that little thing, that worm.
You're afraid to try,
she laughed. She tossed the worm away into the bushes at the end of the school grounds.
Sissy, my brother is a big baby sissy.
There was no answer from Bill. He had turned his thoughts away from her and her world, into the regions which only he could reach. Talking to those old, crummy, sticky dead, Edie said to herself. Those empty, poo-poo dead that never have any fun or nothing. And then a really stunning idea came to her. I'll fix it so he gets out and into that crazy man, Mr. Tree, who they're all talking about right now, she decided. Mr. Tree stood up in the Foresters' Hall last night and said those dumb religious things about repenting, and so if Bill acts funny and doesn't know what to do or say, nobody will pay any attention. Yet that posed the awful problem of her finding herself containing a crazy man. Maybe I could take poison like I'm always saying, she decided. I could swallow a lot of oleander leaves or castor beans or something and get rid of him. He'd be helpless. He couldn't stop me. Still, it was a problem. She did not relish the idea of having that Mr. Tree, she had seen him often enough not to like him, inside herself. He had a nice dog, and that was about all. Terry, the dog. That was it. She could lie down against Terry, and Bill could get out and into the dog, and everything would be fine. But dogs had a short life, and Terry was already 7 years old, according to her mother and father. He had been born the same time almost as she and Bill. Darn it, she thought. It's hard to decide. It's a real problem what to do with Bill, who wants so bad to get out and see and hear things. And then she thought, who of all the people I know would I like most to have living inside my stomach? And the answer was, her father.
You want to walk around as daddy? She asked Bill.
But Bill did not answer. He was still turned away, conversing with the great majority beneath the ground. I think, she decided, that Mr. Tree would be the best, because he lives out in the country with sheep and doesn't see too many people, and it would be easier on Bill that way because he wouldn't have to know very much about talking. He'd just have Terry out there and all the sheep. And then, with Mr. Tree being crazy now, it's really perfect. Bill could do a lot better with Mr. Tree's body than Mr. Tree is doing, I bet, and all I have to worry about, really, is chewing the right number of poisonous oleander leaves. Enough to kill him, but not me. Maybe two would do. Three at the most, I guess. Mr. Tree went crazy at the perfect time, she decided. He doesn't know it, though. But wait till he finds out. Won't he be surprised? I might let him live for a while inside me, just so he'd realize what happened. I think that would be fun. I never liked him, even though Mama does, or says she does. He's creepy. Edie shuddered. Poor, poor Mr. Tree, she thought delightedly. You aren't going to ruin any more meetings at the Foresters' Hall, because where you'll be, you won't be able to preach to anybody, except maybe to me, and I won't listen. Where can I do it? She asked herself. Today I'll ask Mama to take us out there after school, and if she won't do it, I'll hike out there by myself. I can hardly wait, Edie said to herself, shivering with anticipation. The bell for class rang, and together with the other children, she started into the building. Mr. Barnes was waiting at the door of the single classroom, which served all the children from first grade to sixth. As she passed him, deep in thought, he said to her, "Why so absorbed, Edie? What's on your weighty mind today?"
"Well," she said, halting, "you were for a while. Now it's Mr. Tree instead."
"Oh, yes," Mr. Barnes said, nodding. "So you heard about that." The other children had passed on in, leaving them alone. So Edie said,
"Mr. Barnes, don't you think you ought to stop doing what you're doing with my mama? It's wrong. Bill says so, and he knows."
The schoolteacher's face changed color, but he did not speak. Instead, he walked away from her, into the room, and up to his desk, still darkly flushed. "Did I say it wrong?" Edie wondered. "Is he mad at me now? Maybe he'll make me stay after, for punishment, and maybe he'll tell Mama and she'll spank me." Feeling discouraged, she seated herself and opened the precious, ragged, fragile, coverless book to the story of Snow White. It was their reading assignment for the day. Lying in the damp, rotting leaves, beneath the old live oak trees in the shadows, Bonnie Keller clasped Mr. Barnes to her, and thought to herself that this was probably the last time. She was tired of it, and Hal was scared, and that, she had learned from long experience, was a fatal combination.
"All right," she murmured. "So she knows.
but she knows on a small child's level. She has no real understanding.
She knows it's wrong, Barnes answered. Bonnie sighed. Where is she now? Barnes asked.
Behind that big tree over there, watching.
Hal Barnes sprang to his feet as if stabbed. He whirled around, wide-eyed, then sagged as he comprehended the truth. You and your malicious wit, he muttered. But he did not return to her. He stayed on his feet, a short distance off, looking glum and uneasy. Where is she really?
She hiked out to Jack Tree's sheep ranch.
But, he gestured, the man's insane. Won't he be, well, isn't it dangerous?
She just went out to play with Terry, the verbose canine.
Bonnie sat up and began picking bits of humus from her hair.
I don't think he's even there. The last time anybody saw Bruno, he...
Bruno? Barnes echoed. He regarded her queerly.
I mean, Jack.
Her heart labored. He said the other night something about having been responsible for the high-altitude devices in 1972. Barnes continued to scrutinize her. She waited, her pulse throbbing in her throat. Well, it was bound to come out sooner or later.
He's insane, she pointed out. Right? He believes...
He believes, Hal Barnes said, that he's Bruno Bluthgeld. Isn't that right? Bonnie shrugged.
That, among other things.
And he is, isn't he? And Stock still knows it. You know it. That Negro knows it.
No, she said. That Negro doesn't know it. And stop saying that Negro. His name is Stuart McConchy. I talked to Andrew about him, and he says he's a very fine, intelligent, enthusiastic, and alive person.
Barnes said, So, Dr. Bluthgeld didn't die in the emergency. He came here. He's been here, living among us. The man most responsible for what happened.
Go murder him,
Bonnie said. Barnes grunted.
I mean it, Bonnie said. I don't care anymore. Frankly, I wish you would.
It would be a good manly act, she said to herself. It would be a distinct change. Why have you tried to shield a person like that?
I don't know.
She did not care to discuss it.
Let's go back to town, she said.
His company wearied her, and she had begun to think once again about Stuart McCunchy.
I'm out of cigarettes, she said. So you can drop me off at the cigarette factory.
She walked toward Barnes's horse, which, tied to a tree, complacently cropped the long grass. A darky, Barnes said with bitterness. Now you're going to shack up with him. That certainly makes me feel swell.
Snob, she said. Anyhow, you're afraid to go on. You want to quit. So the next time you see Edie, you can truthfully say, I am not doing anything shameful and evil with your mama, Scout's honor. Right?
She mounted the horse, picked up the reins, and waited.
Come on, Hal.
An explosion lit up the sky. The horse bolted, and Bonnie leaped from it, throwing herself from its side to roll, sliding, into the shrubbery of the oak forest. Bruno, she thought. Can it be him, really? She lay clasping her head, sobbing with pain. A branch had laid her scalp open, and blood dripped through her fingers and ran down her wrist. Now Barnes bent over her. He tugged her up, turned her over.
Bruno, she said. God damn him! Somebody will have to kill him! They should have done it long ago. They should have done it in 1970, because he was insane then.
She got her handkerchief out and mopped at her scalp.
Oh, dear, she said. I really am hurt. That was a real fall.
The horse is gone, too, Barnes said.
It's an evil god, she said, who gave him that power, whatever it is. I know it's him, Hal. We've seen a lot of strange things over the years, so why not this? The ability to recreate the war, to bring it back, like he said last night. Maybe he's got us snared in time. Could that be it? We're stuck fast. He...
She broke off as a second white flash broke overhead, traveling at enormous speed. The trees around them lashed and bent, and she heard here and there the old oaks splinter. "I wonder where the horse went," Barnes murmured, rising cautiously to his feet and peering around.
"Forget the horse," she said. "We'll have to walk back, that's obvious. Listen, Hal, maybe Hoppy can do something. He has funny powers, too. I think we ought to go to him and tell him. He doesn't want to be incinerated by a lunatic. Don't you agree? I don't see anything else we can do at this point."
"That's a good idea," Barnes said, but he was still looking for the horse. He did not seem really to be listening.
"Our punishment," Bonnie said.
"What?" he murmured.
"You know, for what Edie calls our shameful evil doings. I thought the other night, maybe we should have been killed with the others. Maybe it's a good thing this is happening."
"There's the horse," Barnes said, walking swiftly from her. The horse was caught. His reins had become tangled in a bay limb. The sky now had become sooty black. She remembered that color. It had never entirely departed anyhow. It had merely lessened. "Our little fragile world," Bonnie thought, "that we labor to build up after the emergency, this puny society with our tattered schoolbooks, our deluxe cigarettes, our wood-burning trucks. It can't stand much punishment. It can't stand this that Bruno is doing, or appears to be doing. One blow again directed at us, and we will be gone. The brilliant animals will perish. All the new odd species will disappear as suddenly as they arrived." "Too bad," she thought with grief. "It's unfair. Terry, the verbose dog. Him, too. Maybe we were too ambitious. Maybe we shouldn't have dared to try to rebuild and go on." "I think we did pretty well," she thought, "all in all. We've been alive, we've made love and drunk Gill's five-star, taught our kids in a peculiar windowed school building, put out News and Views, cranked up a car radio, and listened daily to W. Somerset Maugham. What more could be asked of us?" "Christ," she thought, "it isn't fair, this thing now. It isn't right at all. We have our horses to protect, our crops, our lives." Another explosion occurred, this time further off. To the south, she realized, near the site of the old ones. San Francisco. Wearily, she shut her eyes. "And just when this McConchy has shown up, too," she thought. "What lousy, stinking luck." The dog, placing himself across the path, barring her way, groaned in his difficult voice.
"She's busy. Stop."
He woofed in warning. She was not supposed to continue on to the wooden shack. Yes, Edie thought, I know he's busy. She had seen the explosions in the sky.
"Hey, you know what?"
she said to the dog.
"What?"
the dog asked, becoming curious. He had a simple mind, as she well knew. He was easily taken in.
"I learned how to throw a stick so far nobody can find it," she said.
She bent, picked up a nearby stick.
"Want me to prove it?"
Within her, Bill said,
"Who are you talking to?"
He was agitated, now that the time was drawing near.
"Is it Mr. Tree?"
"No," she said.
"Just the dog."
She waved the stick.
"Bet you a paper $10 bill. If I throw it, you can't find it."
"Sure I can,"
the dog said, and whined in eagerness. This was his favorite sort of sport.
"But I can't bet,"
he added.
"I have no money."
From the wooden shack walked Mr. Tree all at once. Taken by surprise, both she and the dog stopped what they were doing. Mr. Tree paid no attention to them. He continued on up a small hill and disappeared down the far side, out of sight.
"Mr. Tree!"
Edie called.
"Maybe he isn't busy now," she said to the dog. "Go ask him, okay? Tell him I want to talk to him a minute."
Within her, Bill said restlessly,
"He's not far off now, is he? I know he's there. I'm ready. I'm going to try real hard this time. He can do almost anything, can't he? See and walk and hear and smell. Isn't that right? It's not like that worm."
"He doesn't have any teeth," Edie said.
but he has everything else that most people have.
As the dog obediently loped off in pursuit of Mr. Tree, she began walking along the path once more.
"It won't be long," she said. "I'll tell him."
She had it all worked out.
"I'll say, 'Mr. Tree, you know what? Well, I swallowed one of those duck collars hunters use, and if you lean close, you can hear it. How's that?"
"I don't know," Bill said desperately. "What's a duck collar? What's a duck, Edie? Is it alive?"
He sounded more and more confused, as if the situation were too much for him.
"You sissy," she hissed. "Be quiet."
The dog had reached Tree, and now the man had turned. He was starting back toward her, frowning.
"I am very busy, Edie," Mr. Tree called. "Later. I'll talk to you later. I can't be interrupted now."
He raised his arms and made a bizarre motion toward her, as if he were keeping time to some music. He scowled and swayed, and she felt like laughing, he looked so foolish.
"I just want to show you something," she called back.
"Later."
He started away, then spoke to the dog.
"Yes, sir,"
the dog growled, and loped back toward the girl.
"No,"
the dog told her.
"Stop."
"Darn it," Edie thought. "We can't do it today. We'll have to come back maybe tomorrow."
"Go away,"
the dog was saying to her, and it bared its fangs. It had been given the strongest possible instructions. Edie said,
"Listen, Mr. Tree."
And then she stopped, because there was no longer any Mr. Tree there. The dog turned, whined, and within her Bill moaned.
"Edie," Bill cried. "He's gone. I can feel it. Now where'll I go to get out? What'll I do?"
High up in the air, a tiny black speck blew and tumbled. The girl watched it drift as if it were caught in some violent spout of wind. It was Mr. Tree, and his arms stuck out as he rolled over and over, dropping and rising like a kite. What's happened to him? She wondered dismally, knowing that Bill was right. Their chance, their plan, was gone forever now. Something had hold of Mr. Tree, and it was killing him. It lifted him higher and higher, and then Edie shrieked. Mr. Tree suddenly dropped. He fell like a stone straight at the ground. She shut her eyes, and the dog, Terry, let out a howl of stark dismay.
"What is it?" Bill was clamoring in despair. "Who did it to him? They took him away, didn't they?"
"Yes,"
she said, and opened her eyes. Mr. Tree lay on the ground, broken and crooked, with his legs and arms sticking up at all angles. He was dead. She knew that, and so did the dog. The dog trotted over to him, halted, turned to her with a stricken, numbed look. She said nothing. She stopped, too, a distance away. It was awful what they, whoever it was, had done to Mr. Tree. It was like the glasses man from Bolinas, she thought. It was a killing.
"Hoppy did it," Bill moaned. "Hoppy killed Mr. Tree from a distance because he was afraid of him. Mr. Tree's down with the dead now. I can hear him talking. He's saying that... He says... Hoppy reached out all the way from his house where he is and grabbed Mr. Tree and picked him up and flung him everywhere."
"Gee,"
Edie said. "I wonder how come Hoppy did that," she wondered. "Because of the explosions Mr. Tree was making in the sky? Was that it? Did they bother Hoppy, make him sore?" She felt fright. That Hoppy, she thought. He can kill from so far off. Nobody else can do that. We better be careful, very careful, because he could kill all of us. He could fling us all around or squeeze us.
"I guess News and Views will put this on the first page," she said, half to herself, half to Bill.
"What's News and Views?"
Bill protested in anguish.
"I don't understand what's going on. Can't you explain it to me, please?"
Edie said,
"We better go back to town now."
She started slowly away, leaving the dog sitting there beside the squashed remains of Mr. Tree. "I guess," she thought, "it's a good thing you didn't switch, because if you had been inside Mr. Tree, you would have been killed." And, she thought, He would be alive inside me, at least until I got the oleander leaves chewed and swallowed. And maybe he would have found a way to stop that. He had funny powers. He could make those explosions, and he might have done that inside me.
"We can try somebody else," Bill said hopefully.
"Can't we? Do you want to try that? What do you call it again, that dog?"
"I think I'd like to be that dog. It can run fast and catch things and see a long way, can't it?"
"Not now,"
she said, still frightened, wanting to get away.
"Some other time. You'd better wait."
And she began to run back along the path in the direction of town.